Hello and welcome to the Ops Team. This is the show where we get together once a week and we talk about what is new in the world of DevOps, in the world of on-prem devices and Azure. We are the Ops Team and hi.
This is episode 9.
It is.
Yeah.
I can only do this kind of finger representation for
one more episode.
And then I'm going to have to get you guys involved.
You can always use your toes.
That'll get awkward very quickly.
Yeah.
Well, the web feet is a tricky thing.
Moving on.
Yes.
All right. Sorry. So let's spin it up here.
You might notice we're missing somebody.
Oh.
As well.
Actually, yeah. I hadn't noticed. No.
The likeness is uncanny.
Yeah.
But yeah, unfortunately, Rick couldn't make it to the studio today. But we will be catching up with him. Don't worry. He will get your latest fix of Azure news. A bit later on, well, as part of the overall video, obviously, but we'll catch up with him later on. Yeah.
He does look a little bit different, though.
He's evolved.
Time.
Yeah. He's evolved.
He was an egg, and now he's a chicken.
Yeah.
I think Rick's probably got some news about how he's evolved coming up, hopefully, inside of his video.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's a lightly spiced jerk chicken.
It is a lightly spiced jerk.
Yeah.
There you go. More on that later.
Yeah.
Sure.
Alrighty. Let's spin it around here.
What have we got for the spinner today? What have we got? Do we want to show people?
We have. Picture of Matt.
Can you see? Is it better on that
Let's
one?
Try that one. Let's see if that works.
There we go.
Yeah, it's a picture of me and my finger. I'll do the pose actually in the background there.
Oh, look at that. Look at that. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Let's.
And this is on a 640 XL in beautiful white.
Lumia 640 XL.
Yeah, nice. So who's going first? Here we go. It's you.
Okay.
You. You go
first. Yeah. Awesome. Okay.
Now. There'll be no sound effects because I couldn't download it from the store for some reason after rebuilding my re-imaging my machine recently. So we're just going to have the timer.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. So your 5 minutes start.
Now. Okay. So probably the biggest news this week, it has been a relatively quiet week. There's some CES news that's come out of Las Vegas, so we'll cover that in a second. But one thing that has come out from the Azure Active Directory guys is a little bit about how people are using Azure Active Directory. Some of the kind of feeds and speeds around Azure AD, just kind of a little bit of an update as to what people are doing. Kind of some of the big things to pull out from this. The number of people that are authenticating in Azure Active Directory kind of grown a little bit. The last number that we kind of told people that we had of people authenticating into Azure Active Directory on a kind of daily basis was 1 billion, which is kind of small actually now. So we're now at 1.3 billion. We've gone up by another 300 million.
That's like the ops team growth in viewership.
It's
to infinity and beyond.
Yeah,
pretty astronomical actually. And a lot of this comes off the back of Azure AD Connect, which is a new synchronization technology that went into GA about 6 months ago, replaces DirSync. So if you're on Office 365, you want to be looking at how you can replace DirSync with Azure AD Connect. And what we're starting to see is that now around about 50% of customers out there are using DirSync still. But Azure AD Connect and Azure AD Sync, which is the sync engine behind Azure AD Connect, they're actually taking up about 25% of the users on their own. So pretty impressive. The third party section, which is kind of funny, is very small. There's actually virtually nobody else that's using other sync tools out there in order to synchronize with Azure Active Directory. Kind of self-explanatory when you understand that the sync tool doesn't really cost anything with your subscription, so why would you be using a third party? And then when we look down at who's actually doing those authentications, a lot of them are coming from ADFS Federated, which we kind of expected. But also we're seeing a lot of people just doing Azure AD password sync, so not having to put all the federation stuff in place. Really interesting post. We'll put that into the show notes so that you guys can see that. And then for the rest of what's been happening this week, everybody has been down at CES in Las Vegas.
Woo-woo.
Yeah.
Apart from us. Yep.
But that's kind of nice because it kind of gets a little bit mad down there. And actually, lots of cool new devices coming out. This is the time where the industry kind of shows off all their cool stuff. So we've had quite a few bits of nice IoT type stuff coming out. We'll talk about those on later shows. But around some of the more kind of traditional devices, lots and lots of new Windows 10 devices coming out.
Loads of thin ones.
Yeah, really thin ones. An especially thin and light one from Samsung, which is nice and very, very cool. There's a new Galaxy Tab Pro S tablet from Samsung as well, which kind of has the breakaway form factor, so it can be the 2-in-1. Very, very cool piece of kit from Dell as well. Their Dell business machines are all looking very nice and sleek and powerful.
The Infinity screen is really nice on the Dells.
Yeah, it's beautiful. That whole like bezel-less thing that they've got going on, lovely bit.
The Lenovo Yoga looked good as well. I can't remember the model number, but it was, again, another really thin one.
That's the one that I really want. I really want to get my hands on a Lenovo Yoga X1.
Yeah, so if anyone's watching from Lenovo...
Hi.
We'll gladly display it on this table for our 1.3 billion viewers and growing.
Yes. Yeah. That was actual authentication.
Just to check. Yeah. So, we don't have that many viewers.
Very, very cool thing with the Yoga. It's the same kind of platform as the X1. I'm currently an X1 owner as well as my Surface. And this thing, it opens up, but then it keeps going. And it goes all the way back into the fully folded back thing. And the keys move inside so that it's completely flush.
You don't get the key imprints on your screen.
You don't get the key imprints on the screen. Beautiful piece of kit.
Nice.
The other thing that was announced over the course of the past few weeks was a little bit around Windows 10 momentum. This is kind of cool. Windows 10 is running on over 200 million devices today. That's pretty impressive.
Nice.
Just to put that into a little bit of perspective, I was looking at the numbers for deployments of Android Marshmallow, which is the latest version.
I saw you tweet this, actually. Yeah.
And it's kind of fascinating to watch this because Marshmallow's been out in the market now for, I think it's about 3 months, maybe even a little bit more. And they're just not getting deployed. Mm. It's just not moving yet.
Does it never really get prompted for the update automatically? No, is it carrier specific?
Right. And that's one of the things that that we've got away from with Windows, that we don't have that kind of limitation on the way that people do do updates.
So with Windows 10 specifically, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of stuff inside of that, but it's kind of interesting to see that there's a lot of people moving towards Windows 10. Things like the developer marketplace, that's pretty cool. We've seen people making
the cow.
You started so you can finish.
Oh, okay. So developers are now making a lot more money out of the Windows Store. I think the number is that they've made twice as many. We've seen a twofold increase in the number of paid transactions from PCs and tablets over the holiday season.
Mm. So those 200 million Windows 10 devices, is that exclusively laptops, desktops, or is that everything that can run Windows 10, like Xbox?
Everything that can run Windows 10. So it's laptops,
I'm trying to think
desktops.
How many I've got. So this one, Surface 2, desktop 3, 2 Xboxes at home, 4, 5, 2 media centers, 6, 7.
Yeah.
No, yeah, 7. It I'm a big up. Contributor.
Yeah.
There you go. Skewing the numbers, really.
Yeah, it adds up very quickly. That's kind of the idea that everything that you're going to use is going to run Windows. And that's kind of cool. Mm. So,
nice.
Okay. Let's,
let's do the spinaroo there.
Mm. Here we go.
My finger is back.
That, I would say you is the closest one.
Oh, spin it again too quickly. It's you now.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
That's fine.
Okay. Right. You want to go?
Sure.
Camera's aligned. I can't see for the jerk chicken.
Yeah. We're good enough. Yeah. We're good.
Yep. So we are good. I'm going to start your timer. Are you ready?
Yeah.
No.
First up, shameless plug for a new Channel 9 series of a release management course, I guess, if you want to call it that, on release management, the new service we have. So I recorded that with Donovan Brown in December, so about a month ago, and that is now live. If you want to learn about the release management service, how it works, how to get going with it, that's now up there. So that's my first one.
Nice.
The next one I have is also related to release management. That is, a few days ago, actually, there was the PM for test automation and the release management team had a very long detailed post about how their team uses their own product to test their product. Yeah. So it's a very interesting thing, right? Where the release management team is doing test automation for release management. And then they explain how they do all of that using their own product, which is cool from that weird dilemma of testing your own thing. But it is also very applicable to other folks because, you know, some people think about release management, oh, it's just release, right? But the reality is that if you have a really efficient release management pipeline, you're actually doing testing as a part of that pipeline, not just deploying the bits, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about the traditional way of doing things, is the ops guy goes and deploys stuff. when you have that fully automated, things start to change quite a bit in terms of not just the deployments automated, but what else can we do? Well, we can run a whole ton of automated tests, because now that that thing is in a stage or a pre-production environment, we can throw load at it. We can do a whole suite of tests to see if things, functional tests, for instance, to see if those things still work. That's all part of that. And there's knowing how our own product team does it is a pretty good, pretty good deal,
yeah,
right?
That's pretty cool.
It's helpful.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Let's see. So the third item that I have is there is a Sam Guggenheimer. He released a new video from that he did at Gartner on how Microsoft does DevOps. So it's kind of the latest thing there on how we do things, and how I think it's good to have companies have them think about how they might want to operate, right? So kind of how we evolved. If you're a traditional organization that you're not implementing DevOps, gives you some ideas on how you might want to do things too.
Nice.
So, yeah. And the last item that I have.
That's a secret four.
Yeah.
Go for a world record.
Yeah. Yeah. So four, just going at a good clip here.
And your time's up.
So we have there's a new article on Azure Automation Service, and it just talks about the textual versus graphical way to do things with Azure Automation.
Did I hear you say OMS automation?
OMS, yeah. Okay, well, the article still says Azure Automation, but you know, you go in the service, it still says that. But anyway,
blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's a good discussion on, and a reminder for folks about the service, because there are underlying fundamental for DevOps is automation, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just across everything, right? The big kind of confusion can come when, which tools do I use to automate? And I would say in a fully, cloud service world, you know, your two major choices would be the Visual Studio Team Services platform, and then OMS or Azure Automation, whatever you want to call it. Is the other one. And I guess, you know, in terms of the way to think, I like to think about it, is the Visual Studio Team Services is good for the software development or deployment kind of life cycle, right? So for doing new, automating the deployment of updates, automating tests, automating anything that relates directly to, you know, that new software being developed or bug fixes or whatever, then that's probably the primary place you want to do that. Anything that's outside of that scope, for instance, things like I want to clean up my Azure service every so often, or I want to, do things that are on a regular recurring basis independent of when I have anything that ties directly to changes or updates or things that relate to the app itself, then now you've got this major bucket there to use that. So that's the way I like to see it.
There you go.
Yeah. Perfect. Perfect. There we go.
Obviously rehearse that.
Yes.
Yeah. Well done. You've got four things in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
There we go.
Nice.
That's a pretty good clip. So I'm going to spin the bubble one last time, or the phone.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that's ended up on
that's,
Rick.
That's Rick, definitely.
Yeah. So Rick, over to you.
As you can see, I didn't make it into the room. I don't know what kind of lovely device or object they decided to use to replace me this time. Last time it was an egg. Who knows what it is going to be this time. I'm Rick, looking after Azure from the Azure desk, if you will. But I'm coming to you from my new office, because I don't know if you've managed to notice or saw online or just happened to hear from anybody. Maybe they mentioned the show. I've taken on a new role at Microsoft. It's been 11 years in the role of a technical evangelist, and I've decided to get my hands dirty and actually join the product team, and I'm now part of the Azure Compute team here in the engineering side of the house, first time over in engineering. And so, a bunch of different projects I'm working on. I'm still going to be doing the op show, though, because so long as they decide to let me continue to use my seat, I'm going to take it, because it gives me a good platform to go off and talk about Azure stuff, and maybe give you some of the inside scoop of what's going on. From a technology perspective, for my 5-minute section here, maybe I'll talk a little bit about a couple of announcements that were just made recently. It's kind of like a catch-up after Christmas holidays and that sort of stuff. One of them was the general availability in preview mode. I guess I should probably use the proper terms. It's the preview release, that's the proper term, for the Azure Security Center. The Azure Security Center is available free of charge for now at this point in time on anyone's Azure subscription. Goes through and you simply enable it inside your subscription. It then goes in and analyzes and looks at your existing compute resources and PaaS resources and tells you if you're following best practices with regards to security, and also allows you to implement policy that will go in and enforce different settings of security down on top of your PaaS instances and also your IaaS instances. Make sure that they're doing updates, make sure that they're also doing antivirus, that sort of stuff, as well as putting in security best practices for known issues with SQL Server, as an example, for configurations. Pretty cool stuff there. The really neat thing about it, though, is it also goes in and tells you about real-time brute force attacks, as an example, that might be taking place on your infrastructure with regards to maybe RDP connections or things like that, and can alert you about this and possibly even go through and do some automatic remediation. Go check it out. Really cool on the Azure Security Center inside of the Azure portal on every single subscription. A project that I'm working on right now, you can kind of pan over there and look at my board if you wanted to, and look at some really bad handwriting, is something that's called a learning path. That's part of the documentation side of things on the Azure.com website. If you go to Azure.com, click on documentation, you can choose compute as an example, and then take a look at virtual machines. And then in there, you'll see a link to be able to go off and try the virtual machines learning path. That'll walk you through from 0 to 100 with regards to getting subscription started, going for a trial, using different commands as far as using PowerShell, the portal, or Azure CLI to go off and get things done and get you up and running quickly, and then some other documents as well for more advanced techniques and things for performance and data stuff. Really kind of an interactive way of being able to go through and look at them. My project that I'm working on with regards to this is I'm trying to make them even more personalized so that they are going to be designed for people that come from a Windows background or people that come from a Linux background. So I don't know if you can see over here, I'm almost done doing a reinstall on one of my laptops to be able to get a fresh Linux distro installed on there to make it nice and happy, and also a Windows distro as well in dual boot mode, because I've got to brush up on my Linux command line skills and working with terminals and SSH and stuff like that that I haven't touched in years as part of this team. So the team that I'm part of is the Azure Scale Linux and Partner Strategies team over here on the compute side of the house with engineering. And that's it. Stuff I can talk about, I think, are probably around almost 5 minutes. You know, I'm going to do a shout out to my buddy Corey Sanders on the Azure Compute team, who does a show with me called Tuesdays with Corey. We're always looking for content you'd like to go off and have videos created about. And so if you wanted to tweet us at hashtag AzureTWC with possible suggestions on content topics, we'll make sure to get back and respond and also possibly schedule them up to be able to be shot. So with that, enjoy. Looking forward to being back in the bunker on a regular schedule. And I'll catch up with you real soon. Cheers.
That was pretty fascinating.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's really got some momentum behind that Azure stuff. And that announcement he made was very interesting as well.
The announcement of him moving along.
New role. Yeah. But he'll still be joining us for the ops team.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Apart from this week, he had a clash, so he couldn't make it. So we had the chicken breast, which is all we could find.
But I did Simon bring the egg cup. Simon saved the day here with us.
That's not why I carry an egg cup around with me so often, but you know, there you go.
Yeah, I was going to ask that question.
Happens to be in my bag. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
So I guess it's me, yeah. So I shall start my timer. There we go, my 5 minutes. So the first thing I wanted to talk about was something that is gaining a lot of traction, a lot of excitement, certainly in the on-premises data center space, and that is Azure Stack specifically. And we recently announced, just before Christmas, Jeffrey Snover announced the hardware requirements for the first technical preview. Now, hold your horses, we've not actually released the first technical preview. I don't have them. These guys don't have them, you don't have them yet, unless you're watching this in the future, and you may, in which case everything I just said is wrong. But the hardware requirements are important to understand, because it's not like Azure Pack was. Azure Pack, which is currently available in market, it's been around for a year or so, or a year or two. Azure Pack is a Azure consistent looking and feeling experience that you layer on top of Windows Server and System Center inside your data center, and it looks and feels like the old, I'll call it Azure portal, the classic portal that many of us referred to. The hardware requirements for that were not small by any means, especially for a large-scale production environment, but if you just wanted to test it in a POC-type experience, you could actually roll it out in a single VM in an express deployment on a single Hyper-V host and consume about 4 or 8 gig of RAM and a bit of hard drive space. So it wasn't drastically large. Compare that with what Jeffrey has announced for the hardware requirements for Azure Stack, which, to give extra context, is not just an evolution of Azure Pack. It's a true, consistent, taking Azure code and bits and experiences and bringing it on-premises. So it's a lot bigger, a lot broader. It provides a lot more capabilities to enable you to deliver an Azure consistent experience in your data center. So much so that I could build an app, develop an app on-premises against Azure Stack, and it will work without modification in Azure. You know, that level of consistency across APIs and the whole experience. So it's very, very powerful, and we've got lots of resources that can help you learn more. But we've kind of gone quiet for a while on Azure Stack.
I think it's also important to point out it's not dependent on System Center.
Correct, yeah.
Yes.
It will integrate as we go forward, and we'll make sure we announce about where those integration points lie, but it is a thing in itself, Azure Stack. It's and we'll release more details as we go forward. But the hardware requirements, as a minimum, and this is a single server that we're helping you understand with this first technical preview. It's just a single server POC type deployment. All of the bits aren't there yet. All of the plumbing and integration with 2016 software defined storage, networking, all, not everything is there yet. This first release is really aimed at giving you an experience of Azure Stack and an understanding of the APIs, and so you can start to test your apps that you've perhaps built for Azure and you want to now bring and test against Azure Stack. But in terms of that single machine, you're not going to run this in a single VM, put it this way. So you need a physical server with at least a minimum of 12 cores. It probably would run on less, but as a recommendation, which 2 sockets, 6 cores is achievable. 96 gig of RAM. This isn't a laptop situation now, not even a big laptop. This is a minimum for compute memory. Yeah. BIOS, you just need Hyper-V SLAT support, which is, if you've got a 2012 certified machine, you'll be fine, or 2012 R2. NIC, nothing special, just certified for 2012 or R2. OS, you need a drive, obviously, for your OS. Could be hard drive or SSD, just to store the local OS that will be installed on there. And then some data drives, of which a minimum of 4, because as part of the install and configuration, we'll enable spaces and all that stuff. And for the disks, obviously, they'll be connected via RAID. They'll be internal. There's information on the blog that I'll provide you on the combinations, and a couple of recommended pieces of hardware, if you've got them as well, that we've been working with in our testing. The recommended is 16 cores, 128 gig of RAM, and then no difference for the OS disk and the extra storage, apart from a little bit more capacity.
It seems like a lot.
To run it on a single host.
But I mean, if you think about the directory of things have been heading, not out there, right?
No, and don't forget, this is technical preview one. So they've not focused necessarily on everything being streamlined, everything being at its most efficient. This is not like tech preview 4 or in the future 5 or wherever we go with Windows Server. We're at that stage now. This is TP1 for Azure Stack. So this is still very early in the overall process of Azure Stack. So it just gives you a good chance to get used to it.
And you're presumably going to run any workload on top of that incredibly virtualized.
It's primarily focused on running it in IaaS VMs, using the ARM template model, running PaaS services on there as well. So it's not designed, this first POC, to test out multi-scale, multi-VM apps and that kind of thing. It's just designed to get you used to it and understand and consume the APIs. We'll talk about more about the scenarios as we go forward.
Yeah, I found companies who have this big...
You can carry on.
Okay. So I was just saying, I've seen companies who would really love to take advantage of Azure capabilities, cloud services, those kinds of things, but they have perhaps this big, we'll just call it monolith application that has tons of database, tons of physical hardware requirements of network, all kinds of stuff. So Azure Stack, I think, is a great way to start to blend that. If you have Azure Stack on premises, you can start to do things in a new kind of way, DevOps type way,
yeah,
and take that service where you wouldn't normally be able to just do, set up a VPN tunnel and that's going to be good enough, but you could actually truly run Azure there until you start to maybe strangle out that application.
Yeah, that's right. Or re-architect it in such a way that makes it more of a modern cloud, or cloud-aware application.
Yeah.
So that was me. I had one other thing to talk about, which I want to include in the links, which was a new hybrid IT management course on insights, visibility, and security analytics that I myself and Laura Cruz got in the studio and recorded. Very useful if you want to know more about a key part of OMS. And that's part one of this course, and there will be more in the future as well. We're planning a number of more over the next couple of months to cover hybrid IT, so very useful. And I'll include a link in the notes under the video. So that was me. So brings us. Do you want to wrap up anything on the Twitter? Are we up on followers?
I think we've got another couple of people following.
Yeah,
us, which is nice. Thank you very much for following along. We are always on the Twitters at the Ops Team, so you can contact us at any time. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know if there's new topics you'd like us to include. Let us know how you think Rick's doing.
We are hiring. We are hiring. I don't know if the job has been posted externally yet, but we are hiring. Who knows?
Yep. So that brings us to the end.
Yeah. So how can people get in touch with? Well, Jerk Chicken over there. It's at RicksterCDN. Yourself.
I'm at SciMonster.
And I'm at Matt McSpirit.
And I'm at DTZAR.
And you can actually email the Ops Team as well if you prefer that approach. And it's theopsteam@microsoft.com. Obviously, David won't get it because he doesn't monitor that rule. Don't assume a reply from him. But
I might have started doing the same thing.
I'll get it.
Whoops.
Yeah. Sorry.
Just as long as our internal teammates don't.
We did have a note from somebody, though. Somebody sent an email, and I wasn't sure if it was spam or a bot or something like that.
I think it may have been a bot.
Right.
Let's put it down to having been a bot.
Yes.
And then we'll check our email after this.
It did have, yeah.
If you do send us an email, please also tweet us so that we know that you've sent us an email.
And that's, include, I am not a bot.
Yes.
In that email.
I am not a bot.
So, I guess that's it for this week. So we shall see you again next week. Hope you've enjoyed the show. And that's us out for this week. Take care and see you soon.